All right. My guest on the show today, I'm very excited about this one. This is a first after 120 some episodes. It's Andrew Bustamante, former covert CIA officer. So I was, Andrew and I were catching up before we pressed record. I've had some military people on, and you are former military, but I've never talked to anybody from the CIA. So first of all, probably going to make a cheesy joke here, but I just want to make sure that we're not, this isn't being used for some sort of profiling or anything. I'm just a very, you know, nice U.S. citizen. So like, you don't even care about me. I'm a U.S. citizen. So we're not here. So Andrew, we're going to learn a lot about you, about spycraft today, about your background. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason. I'm happy to be here. And don't worry, the profiling was all done before I even said yes.
Yeah, so exactly. So yeah, it was interesting. I noticed that my screen flickered a few times before you came on just to make sure that maybe I'm being vetted. I don't know what's happening, but you're obviously here. So I passed some sort of test.
Yeah, it's all good. It's funny. I remember driving when I first launched my business. My business is called Everyday Spy. And when I first launched my business, I was driving through South Carolina, and I, no kidding, had this old beat up hoopty car like pull up next to me at a stoplight. The window went down. Now, in my part of Florida, when the window goes down at a stoplight, you start like backing off, right? Like,
yeah.
You're afraid someone's going to stand their ground. But instead, this lady hangs out the window and she starts waving at me and she's like, "Do you teach people how to tell if their spouse is cheating on them?" And I'm just, so I learned a long time ago that being from CIA, everybody has their own preconceived notions.
Teach people how to find out if their spouse is cheating on them. They're like, that's the high level work. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing, right? Andrew.
That's what you must be doing.
That's it.
Yeah. Had that sign on my truck. Exactly.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, Andrew. So we got a lot to talk about today. So first things first, what is something that you nerd out about?
Oh, man, there's a lot of stuff that I nerd out about. So even now as an adult, I would say the biggest thing is Star Trek. And I have personally loved the fact that they've redone Star Trek. They found a way to do it in a parallel universe instead of all this garbage that you see. Like the way that Marvel did the Hulk, totally wrong. Just reinventing it over and over again.
Yeah.
Until they finally found like a combo that they liked. And they still don't make Hulk movies. They just make Avengers movies.
That's right.
But the way that they the Star Trek was relaunched was just brilliant. So I'm super happy about that.
My wife
is super happy about that. Happy wife, happy life, man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is so timely. 2 weeks ago, I had Bay LeBlanc Coyne and Laura Westman. They are friends of mine. They're also hosts of a podcast called West of Wonderland, and they're both Disney fanatics. So of course, Star Wars came up, and turns out that Bay is actually a huge Star Trek fan. And I didn't know that. So I'm going to ask you, because you brought up the same question, if you had to pick one television show, one Star Trek television show, what's your favorite of all time?
So this is an unfair question. So I grew up, man, watching Star Trek Next Generation. So Next Gen is everything to me.
Yeah.
But the people that I trust the most in the Star Trek world, they all swear by Deep Space Nine. I just haven't made the time commitment to watch Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
So I can't speak as intelligently as I want to, because when I have to pick between original and Next Gen or anything else, I always do Next Gen.
Yeah.
And of course, there's all these. It's like the Voyagers and all the other stuff that just is weak in comparison to the old stuff.
Yeah, I grew up really liking the original. That's a pretty cool show. It's so trippy. It's so weird. But like, William Shatner is so good in it. But are you watching the new Picard? Isn't there a new show on Paramount Plus now called Picard?
Exactly right. Yeah, my wife and I actually have that earmarked for us to like binge watch on our anniversary or something.
Yeah.
Because we're super excited about that. And what's funny is my son just tapped me on the shoulder in the way that 9-year-old sons tap you on the shoulder, and pointed at Paramount Plus, that platform also has the new Halo movie. And he was like, "Hey, Dad, just saying.
It's a show.
You guys are thinking about it."
Yeah. So Andrew, it's actually a show. Because I watched the first two episodes. It's a show. It's interesting because I was a big Halo fan. Like Halo, the first one came out when that's gaming heaven, right? Like Halo was even the original multiplayers. Do you I hope we can get along the rest of the episode, because my household is much more of a Star Wars episode. I grew up a massive Star Wars fan. My daughter is now 6, and you all can judge me listening. She's seen all 9 of the Star Wars movies, the originals. We watched The Mandalorian. We watched Book of Boba Fett. Do you all also enjoy Star Wars, or is it an either or for you, for your household?
No, we are, our kids are ambivalent, right? And let's be honest, man, like every Star Wars and every Star Trek fan out there, as much as we like to pick on each other about the nuance, I want anyone to challenge any one of us on space not being the ultimate adventure.
Yeah.
That's really what gets us.
Yeah.
Space is the ultimate adventure. It's just like, so I was in Portugal. I was in Portugal this past winter, and we went to the Portuguese, there's a place called World of Discoveries. It's basically a museum dedicated to the Portuguese adventurers who discovered the oceans. And nobody realizes how small the country of Portugal was and how massive its colonies were. So it was like this tiny country colonized huge swaths of the planet because they were the first ones crazy enough to go sail the ocean.
Yeah.
And it was just this awesome homage to how reckless and brave and scary the oceans were to the Portuguese back in the 1600s. It's the same way that space is to us now. Huge and vast and scary.
Yeah, that's so cool, Andrew. Man, I'd love to talk to you for the entire episode about this, but I always find this to get a topic. I'm like, all right, we should probably move on because we've lost any audience members who are like, oh, they're going to talk sci-fi for the next 45 minutes. We're going to talk Spyscape. We're going to talk Spycraft too. And there's obviously Spycraft. There's a lot of Spycraft in Star Trek and Star Wars and all that stuff. So next we're going to talk a little bit about your comfort zone. So you're ex-military, ex-CIA. So my guess is that means there's a lot of stuff that are inside your comfort zone that are probably outside of other people's training, ways of dealing with things. So what is something that is inside of your comfort zone that is, you know, is going to be outside of somebody else's?
Manipulating people, manipulating human behaviors, controlling human decisions. Like it's not hard to take control of someone's mind, attitude, decision-making. Like even right now, just by saying that out loud, there's like half of your audience is sitting there with their eyebrows raised up.
Totally.
So if you're sitting there with your eyebrows raised up, you're like shocked. Like, you can't even say that. That's not real. And then the other half is like shaking their head, judging me right now. Cause they're like, oh, that's such a bad thing to do or whatever else. But the way that I see it, all the bad guys in the world, they know the same truth that the good guys know. Human beings can be manipulated. You can be made to buy something you don't want to buy. You can be made to have sex with somebody who you shouldn't be having sex with. That's just the way human beings are. If bad guys are going to use that stuff against us, I absolutely want to be one of the good guys who uses the same skills to fight those bad guys.
Yeah.
And if anybody doesn't like that, then like they're just setting themselves up to be a victim. And that's another something that's inside my comfort zone. If you take 100% of the population, 80% of the people in the population are going to be victims. They're going to be hurt. 20% of the people inside the population are not. That's just the 80-20 rule. That's statistics, that's metrics, that's measurable, that's proven by science.
Yeah. Oh my God, Andrew, this is so hilarious. I'm sure I know you do a lot of other podcasts. I'm over here going, all right, do I watch out for him to manipulate me on this episode? And am I the 80% or the 20%? And then my second thought is like, maybe I just let it happen and it's all going to be fine.
That's the power of the truth, man. You get to make a choice.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
If you don't talk about the truth, you don't get to make a choice.
The other thing I want to offer to this point, I think that a lot of people want to be manipulated. They don't want to call it manipulation, but people want to have those decisions made for them. They don't want to make those choices, especially like you said, I do a lot of brand strategy work. It's like marketing is like people want to have those decisions made for them. They want to go in and go, oh, I want that thing. So they're like, oh, I'm going to choose from these 25 things. I'm like, no, I want that thing. I saw the commercial or I like the color of the branding or whatever it is. So super, super interesting. I'm definitely going to ask you more about this. And my red flag is a little up, but I'm also kind of along for the ride. So I'm in the medium zone right now.
That's okay, man. So your red flag is up because of human instinct, right? Human nature.
Yeah.
I just tapped on something that triggered fight or flight. And right now you're in the place where you probably want to run, which is why you have the red flag, but you're stuck on this recording. So you
Andrew's like, okay, but it's his podcast and this is going to be a good episode. So his motivation is high enough to stick with it. I love it. I think we're learning about what you do in your business right now, actually. This is so good.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah.
This is so good.
All I do in the business, I've just found a way to take the spy training that I had at CIA and apply it to people in everyday life.
Yeah.
It's been awesome because we get to apply it to individuals. We get to apply it to families. We get to apply it to small business owners, big corporations. We just recently hosted an event for a bunch of chief executive officers, and like, it's just human beings are human beings.
Yeah,
we all love to subdivide based on the color of your skin or where you went to college or how old you are or, you know, who you find, like what you self-identify as. That stuff is so irrelevant to anybody who's performing at an elite caliber, because we understand that the only thing that makes a human being is the pink matter between your ears.
That's right.
And that has no color. That, like, your pink matter does not go to school. Your pink matter just absorbs the information that's presented to it, whether that's college education or video game information or wrong information.
Yeah.
So it's your brain. A brain is a brain, man. And once that's you right. understand the human brain, you basically have the ultimate weapon.
Yeah. So I'm very curious about this second part of this question for you, Andrew. What's something that is outside of your comfort zone that you know is going to be inside of somebody else's?
I really don't like talking about nothing. It's so uncomfortable to me to kill time, to like waste time or go through small talk or just kind of waste resources without any goal or objective. And that is what makes most people really comfortable. Most people are really, really happy to sit there. And I had my car battery died yesterday, right? So I have a 4-year-old who's experimenting with all of the buttons inside the car every time she gets in and out of her car seat.
Of course.
So she decided to turn on the internal light last night or 2 nights ago. We went to bed. We wake up the next day. It's a dead car.
Of course.
We've just moved and we just bought a new car like within the last few months. So we don't have jumper cables. So we end up having to flag down a stranger across the street and ask him, hey, do you have jumper cables? And he comes over and he jumps our car and then proceeds. Jumping a car takes 2.5 minutes.
Right.
It takes no time.
Right.
I'm like, hey, high five. Thanks. You're awesome. You know, tell me where you live. We'll come. We'll drop like a bottle of wine by your house or something.
Yeah.
Because I'm done. Like, transaction complete. You are the hero for the day. I've got stuff to do. Move on with my life. But he wants to sit around and talk about fishing for the next 20 minutes.
Oh.
His favorite fishing holes in the area. His, like, you know, his daughters who he's teaching how to fish. Great dude. But I'm like, this is not where I'm comfortable, man. Like, if you want to dive in deep, let's dive into like your life goals, your personal objectives, your biggest, you know, your biggest failure in your life and how you're going to turn it around to build a legacy for your kids.
Yeah.
If you don't want to talk about that, brother, you don't want to talk to me.
Yeah. So Andrew, question for you around that. And this is my own context around military service. My impression is that there's actually, as you go through training, there's a lot of sitting around. Like, there's a lot of training, you're getting up early, you're doing stuff, but then there's also a lot of bonding time. That's actually part of the experience, is you're bonding with your fellow service people. How did you deal with that? Because I don't know, in the movies they always show it as like a bunch of, we're sitting around and bullshitting and we're doing this and we're hanging out. How did you, is this a new thing you've developed as like, as you've gotten older and you have children, or have you always felt this way about small talk?
Yeah, so I've always felt this way about small talk, but I always thought I was wrong. Right. So for anybody listening, if you've also felt like, oh, I really don't like small talk, but that's just what's expected, so there must be something wrong with me because I'm so uncomfortable, like sitting around talking about nothing, talking about the weather or sports or television. Right. So as I went through the Air Force, as I went through my military career, hurrying up to wait, which is what you're talking about. Right?
Yeah.
You hurry up to get somewhere and then you just wait. And like, when you're learning how to fly, it's terrible because you can only fly when the weather's good. And
right.
It's just miserable, man. You spend hours waiting, sitting, talking about nothing, you know, making crap up just to talk. I always hated it. Then I go to CIA. I land in on the first day of training. And then CIA's training isn't really like revolutionary stuff. What they do is they start to connect the dots of the human brain. And they start to explain why it is that so many people like small talk. And more importantly, why it is that we, as the new recruits, never liked it. And once they start connecting those dots, we start understanding, oh, like the average person is looking for a leader. The average person is looking for something to gleam onto, to connect to, just like you were saying. They want to outsource their decisions. They want to outsource their security. They want to outsource their income. They want to make every one of their needs somebody else's problem. That's why we lean on the police force.
Sure.
Instead of learning to defend ourselves, we want police. Instead of teaching our kids, we want to send them to school. Instead of becoming business owners, we want to work for somebody else. Instead of working harder, right, learning a new skill to get more money, we want someone to give us a raise.
Right? Yeah.
It's just, we want to outsource all of our human needs. And, you know, the agency, just spycraft, is really just a process of learning how to understand what people want, and then twist it in a way that makes them give you secrets in exchange for the thing that they want.
Mm. A lot of parallels to sales and marketing. No, Andrew, a lot of parallels to sales and marketing there.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, why our company has been as successful as it's been.
Yeah.
Like, once somebody taught me to translate my spy skills into marketing skills, then I started understanding, oh, this isn't that different from espionage.
I'm still on the fence whether I'm more scared or less scared at this point. I feel like by the end of this episode, I'm either going to fully give in to what's probably happening here, or I'm going to be fully resistant to it. So I'll keep you posted. My fight or flight is still going over here. I love it. It's so good. I'm glad you're in Florida and I'm here in New York.
Until 2 weeks.
Until, yeah. I know where you're going. Yep. Oh, that's right. All right, Andrew. So I give you 5 minutes and you get to deliver a speech and the entire world gets to hear it. What would you talk about? And what would you want us to do with that information? And this is a very loaded question based on what you've just shared with us.
Yeah, right. So I think that if I had 5 minutes and I was talking to the whole world,
yeah,
the first thing that I would probably say is that the world is split between two people, two types of people. There's producers and then there's consumers. And while every producer does a little bit of consuming, there's a whole lot of consumers that don't do any producing at all.
Mm.
So the important thing to understand is that if you are a producer, then you have unlimited potential. You have the ability to write your own ticket, make as much money as you want to make. You never have to worry about being denied or rejected or anything by a consumer. And the consumers make the bulk of the world, right? And then the consumers out there that don't produce, you're lost. Like you really don't have any value except your value as a consumer. And the thing that's sad about that is once one consumer dies, there's always another consumer in their place to pick up and keep consuming. So if I was really giving a speech to the whole world, what I would really want to do is only talk to producers. So I would say the most offensive things possible to the consumers so they wouldn't talk to me anymore.
Yep.
And I would want every producer out there to hear what I'm saying and have it connect so that they send me an email or give me a phone call so that we can keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
Because it's just, that's if I'm talking to truly the whole world, just because that's your broad stroke.
Yeah. So Andrew, I want to play, it's not devil's advocate, but I want to dig in on this a little bit further. So I think that resonates for a lot of people. And I want to challenge that for those who literally are surviving by being consumers, meaning that they have a job that they don't feel empowered in. They're not maximizing their potential. They're not feeling that. What would you say to those? Because I'm sure the people listening right now to this part are going, ooh, am I a producer or a consumer? And do I feel like I have a choice in being a consumer? Because I think people could argue, well, I'm a producer. I go to my job. I do this thing. What would you say to those people listening?
Yeah. So generally, whenever I bring this topic up, it's an immediate trigger to see if someone's a consumer or producer.
Sure.
If they are like, hell yeah, I'm a producer. Boom. They're a producer. I get them. They get me. If they ask themselves the question, ooh, am I a producer or a consumer? That's an underproductive producer. That's somebody who wants to produce, knows that they can produce, but maybe they lack the skills or the energy or the resources to produce what they want to produce.
Yeah.
Those are your people. They're good at their job.
Yeah.
But they know that they could do so much better if their boss just kind of like let them run loose.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all the people out there that are like, that's not true. There's more than just two. Those are your consumers. Or the people who are like, you know, screw you, dude. I don't really, why am I even listening to you? Yeah, you're a consumer. Move on, right? That visceral reaction where they haven't even considered the question, those are your true blue consumers. Yeah. And of course, the people who are like, well, even having this conversation is a luxury. Because keep in mind, Jason, you know, you are creating a podcast that the whole world can listen to.
That's correct.
But they have to have the ability to tap into a podcast at all.
That's true.
Gigantic swaths of Southeast Asia, Latin America, Africa. There's even places in Europe where people just simply don't have that access.
That's right.
They're trapped being consumers without even the knowledge base to understand the difference between producer and consumer.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, because they just don't have the resource. Yeah, the resources. Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Andrew, so we're going to take a very brief commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on talking to cool people.
All right, Andrew, we are back. I am so excited to give you a nice, broad, open-ended question. What do you want us to know about you?
Not a whole lot, really.
That makes sense.
So, I want you to know that I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And I'm a husband.
Yeah.
And it was those two things that were so important to me that I left CIA. If it was up to me, I would have lived forever undercover, traveling the world, just, you know, like living as a footnote in history would have been awesome.
Mm.
But as soon as I met the woman of my dreams, and as soon as we decided to have children and I was blessed with healthy children, the whole narrative changed.
Yeah.
And I realized that I can't just disappear from history. I have to leave a legacy for this family, right? I have to leave a legacy for my children. I have to do everything I can so that I influence my son and my daughter to be the kind of parents I want them to be, and then to become the kind of parents that they want their children to be.
Yeah.
So the responsibility, the focus of life completely transformed for me. And that's a big reason why I left CIA. And, you know, even harder to accept is that other CIA officers, when faced with the same question, they choose CIA over everything.
Yeah.
And they have broken families and broken homes. And I appreciate their service. I appreciate their service and their sacrifice because I didn't make it. At the same time, like that's the thing I want people to know the most. I really don't care where I came from.
Yeah.
I care the most about what I'm building in the future.
Yeah. So I don't know much about CIA's service other than, of course, pop culture. There's lots of stuff out there about it. It doesn't seem like it would be good to have a family, or would even be allowed in certain circumstances, like your family, because that would by definition kind of make you a little, like if you have little kids and a spouse who knows anything about what you're actually doing, that would actually be a risk. That would be a,
correct.
So are most CIA professionals, you don't usually bring your family. If you're stationed somewhere, like it's like military service, you're out doing a job for a while and your family is usually not with you, right?
Well, it's kind of twisted, man. So it's different because military service is overt service, where CIA
right.
service is covert service.
So a family could be a cover, actually.
Family is reality. So then you build the reality into your cover. So here's what's hard, man, is you have to request permission from CIA. You have to request government permission to tell your kids and your spouse what you do.
I can imagine.
You don't even have control over that, right? Now, for national security reasons, I get that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm fortunate. I fell in love with another covert CIA officer. So my wife and I, we met at CIA. We worked together. And then we got married at CIA, and we continued to work together. So we had pretty transparent understanding of each other.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until we had kids, and that's when it started getting sticky, too, because you gotta request permission to tell your kids what you do. And the worst part about it is, like, I had no problem, you know, a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, even a 3-year-old
right.
lives in their own universe. But once you have a kid that's like 5 or 6, they feel when you go away. They miss you. They grow so fast that you have no idea what you're missing. So the idea of going on a 6-week or an 8-week mission and leaving behind my 6-year-old or 8-year-old son, how am I going to explain that when I come back?
Right.
Or, you know, if my wife goes away, because she would go on the same kind of missions that I would go on individually by herself. She was a total badass. And then what do I tell them if she doesn't come home? She gets a star on the wall at Langley, and that's awesome. She's a hero for her country, but she's just a missing mom for my kids.
Yeah.
So we just didn't want that. That was not an outcome that we were going to accept.
Yeah. This seems like a good point. I want to hear more about your business, what you do, how you train people, who it's for. I checked out your website and I said, this sounds like something I would love to do. So I'd love to hear, because I think you run it locally in Florida for your everyday person. can sign up. And then you also have a, as you mentioned before, a corporate, you have some corporate offering. So what do you do and what do you take people through? I'd love to hear about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So Everyday Spy is a, is the world's first spy training platform made for the public. So we've tried to do everything we can to take, to take the spy skills, the functional, practical, operational skills that we used every day undercover, and we've learned how to apply them to everyday life. The most dangerous part of living undercover isn't the mission. The most dangerous part about living undercover is everyday life. It's how do you handle a trip to the emergency room when you're carrying a passport that really isn't yours? Mm. How do you keep yourself from being mugged when you're in a part of town where you frankly don't belong, but you have to be for the operation, right? How do you, if you are mugged, if you are, you know, assailed, how do you neutralize the threat quickly and quietly and get away from the act so that nobody ever looks and sees you as either the victim or as the aggressor?
Right.
All these considerations, how do you shoot a gun in the fewest amount of bullets to cause the most damage? And then how do you disassemble that gun and get rid of it so that it is never, it's not traceable back to you, right? There's all these different skills that we're taught that we use in our everyday life as covert operatives, but that translate into our everyday life as people, whether it's raising our kids and using the same, like the producer consumer question that we just talked about a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I get a chance to teach my kids the value of that concept when they're 5 and 6 years old. Right now, I'm not calling it producer and consumer, but I'm talking to them about, you know, are you trying to build something? Is there something you'd like to create? Or are you content with being someone who just plays with the things that other people create? And it changes, right? Especially if you've got a kid that knows how to use Legos. It's an amazing conversation you can have with kids
about that
when they're building with Legos.
That's super cool.
So we teach people through a through digital platforms. We teach people, you know, through actual canned lectures and courses online. I have a whole network of current and former CIA officers, KGB officers, Mossad officers, MI6 officers, all of my peers that have either retired or left of their own volition. And I bring them to the table and we talk about whatever we're going to talk about. We teach people how to do everything from shooting and driving to tradecraft and surveillance. We certify people so they can go into private intelligence work or even national security intelligence work. I still take private intelligence contracts for the federal government. And then in between all of those things, we're teaching individuals and corporate executives, and we're giving personal training on changing the way people see the world so they can see the world through the eyes of a spy instead of see the world through an everyday lens.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. We're gonna talk more about how people can connect all of this at the end of the episode. And now I've decided I'm just here for the ride, Andrew. I've decided my fight or flight. I'm like, it's all good. We're gonna hang out. So now I'm gonna have you ask me anything that you want to know, and I'm gonna be listening for anything you might be trying to pull for me. But for you and for the audience, what would you like to ask me that I can answer for the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to die at the end of this podcast episode, mm-hmm. what's the thing that you're the most proud of that you did in the last hour?
The last hour? It's an interesting question, because at the end of this episode, in the last hour, you and I would have been talking for an hour. So I would be most proud to connect with a new person that I never met before and record a fun conversation for everybody.
That's pretty awesome. And it's really powerful when you think about the fact that you're producing an episode that no one else has
produced. Yeah.
Which means that you're bookmarking for all eternity this 1 hour conversation.
Yeah. And for those listening, to have that question asked of you from a CIA former CIA military professional, I'm like, wait a second. Did I get a special package in the mail, a special drink or something? But and also, if that does happen, bye to my wife and kids. And this is under Riverside. It's on Riverside. It's under Andrew. Please publish this episode. That's actually a great question to think about. I thought you were going to say, like, hey, what's the thing you're most proud of in the last few years? You're like, no, the last hour. You're like, oh, it'll be our conversation, because that's that. And just having a fun conversation with you. So
when you're a true producer, man, you start looking at your life through the lens of what did I just produce?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And there's been a number of moments in my life where you pull up on a checkpoint in Africa, or you pull up on a checkpoint in a war zone. And, you know, it's a bunch of guys high on drugs carrying AK-47s, and there's no guarantee they're going to let you through the checkpoint.
Yeah.
And you do a real quick recap of, like, man, what was it all for?
Why? Yeah.
of all the bad decisions I made, how the hell did I get here? Anybody who's ever hung over a toilet after a long night of drinking, and you think to yourself, man, what did I do to get myself here?
Right.
That is exactly what it feels like when you pull up on a bunch of like high AK-47 armored like crazies. You're like, what the hell was I thinking?
Like, if they knew if they had any sort of volition of who you are, you're done.
Yeah, they wouldn't even care about what you do, right? They'll kill you for the $150 in your pocket, or yeah, for the 6 gallons of fresh water in the trunk.
My God.
You really have no control over that situation, which is why you're usually armed to the teeth when you pull up on a checkpoint. And you're just kind of like, we just need one person to get out of here so that they can tell the rest of the story to, you know, our families and to our supervisors.
Yeah. Wow. That's deep. So, Andrew, I'm looking for a second question from you, actually. This is fun.
All right. So, second question. So now that we know what you would do, and now that we know what you'd be the most proud of from the last hour, what are you going to do differently in the next hour?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm thinking about what I have scheduled after this. It's not a podcast episode. I'm leading a call with a bunch of people. What I will do in the next hour is I will be listening for the things that are not being said. Body language, not just paying attention to work, because I have a pull towards – so I do coaching work, which is not the same as security work, but one of the things we do have in common is we're trained to listen. Like, listening is the most important skill. I'm going to be really, really hyper aware of what's not being said. What's the underlying current? What's the underlying context here? And what's the thing that people really want that they're not saying that they want?
Mm.
And I would
also encourage you to make sure that you communicate to others in a way so that they don't have to be as attentive to you as you're being to them.
Yeah, exactly. Because then that takes us out of the flow of human connection, and then we're trying to figure it out. That's great. That's good, because that's a good reminder for me, because I am easily drawn into like the stuff that we're talking about, because as most people are, it's like the small talk or the ego based. Oh, let me tell you how I'm right or how I know the answers to these things. And I'm going to really practice at the end of the day, curiosity and listening for the thing that's outside of what we're actually talking about, or the underlying context of that, which is actually coaching 101, but it's something that I forget all the time. I'm good at it when I'm like, oh, a client's paying me a bunch of money, let me do it. But when I'm not in that space, I'm like, oh, let me just back it off, because it takes more work. It's something that I'm trained to, but it takes for me, it's heavier intellectual load. And that's a good thing.
It is. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. So a lot of times what I'll do also when I know that I'm about to enter into time where I'm pulled away from my family, sometimes what I'll do is I'll try to do something small that puts a bookmark, just like you're making a bookmark for all people listening with this podcast episode. So I have post-it notes that sit next to me. For anybody who's watching, I just showed the post-it notes. Yep. Nobody's watching, so nobody's going to see the post-it notes. But I've got this stack of post-it notes, because what I'll do is I'll leave a little love note for my son or a love note for my daughter. My son can read, my daughter can't.
Yeah.
He'll read the love note I give her. And it takes me like 15 seconds to just drop them a note. I don't interrupt my workday. I leave them a note. I stick it on their wall, or I leave it on the refrigerator or something. And then when they come home in a couple of hours, they're going to see it and they're going to know. It's like a bookmark in time for them that, hey, daddy was thinking of me when I was at school. And then, of course, they're going to rush in here to the office and give me my hugs and kisses and everything else I want. But it's one of those things you can do, especially when
I love that
all day long at home or anywhere else.
Yeah. I love that. That's a new practice that I'm going to take on. Cause for me, we were catching up. For the audience knows, I have a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old. So I drop my daughter off, and like, our thing is, daddy, don't forget to wave when she gets on the bus. And we always wave to each other, which is nice, but there's no bookmark on the other side generally. So I come from work, hey, how was school today? The 1-year-old's already in bed, which we're very fortunate with. But what would be the point in time? I don't know that there would be any bookmark other than that moment that happened, but there's no tangible thing that you could touch.
Yeah.
Is that something that you just outlined for us? Is that something that you learn? Is that a personality thing? Is it from your training? Like, what is that thing? Because that's an interesting concept that I've never heard before.
Yeah. So we're taught at CIA that you've got to understand the human being. The only way that anything goes into your brain is through your 5 senses.
Yeah.
And the more that you use a sensory organ, the less, the more kind of overstimulated it becomes, which is why, like, if you listen to loud music when you were a kid, your hearing gets bad. If you stare at a screen all day, your vision gets bad. right? So yeah. The sensory organs that you use the most become overstimulated and they become desensitized. And the sensory organs that you use the least are the ones that have the highest sensory input. So your nose, right?
Yeah.
Your skin, in today's world, touch is one of the sensory organs that is the least utilized. Your skin is covered by clothing or gloves or whatever else. You spend all day in a clean, especially post-COVID, right?
Yeah.
Nobody touches you and you don't touch other people. But when you leave a little note, you are creating something that someone touches. It takes physical activity to actually pull it off the wall. Or for me, it's leaving a bookmark for me too. I'm the one feeling the pressure of the pen. I'm the one pulling off the post-it note. I'm the one walking to their room. I'm the one sticking it on the wall, right? Like there's so much physical activity that goes into something small like a note. And it doesn't have to be a post-it note.
Sure.
It can be a note card, a pad of paper. My kids have whiteboards that they study on.
Yeah.
And I'll write on their whiteboard, right? But that physical manifestation, that creates a wrinkle in the brain. It creates a neurological connection that wasn't previously there in an underutilized sensory organ. It's the same thing that,
that's so cool.
I mean, yes, it's very CIA, but I've just applied it to an everyday utility.
Yeah, it's amazing, Andrew. I love that. I'm going to start doing that. That's super cool. So what are you passionate about?
I'm really passionate about learning. I'm really passionate about challenge. I'm really passionate about the future. Those are things. And when I think of passion is kind of like nebulous and energetic. And, you know, you can't really pin it down. That's what makes a passion versus like an obsession or whatever. Right. So, but yeah, I'm super passionate about just making the most out of every minute that I have, because I don't know when the last minute will happen.
Yeah. Mm. How do you, or do you talk about that with your children? Like, I know you're probably not going to talk about, oh, this could be your last minute. That's a little morbid for children of your age, but there are ways to have that conversation. I'm curious for me, I'm self-serving. I'm a parent of similar age children. How do you instill that into your children? It's like make the most of every day type of thing, right? Or most of every minute type of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially that's what we do. It's funny. It's hard because with kids, they're really good at making the most out of every minute. What they're bad at is being patient.
Yes.
So it's really hard to teach them like, hey, I really want you to value the moment, but I also want you to be patient because we're going to watch the movie after dinner. And they get upset because they want to watch the movie now and it's 9 a.m., whatever it might be. So instead, what I try to do is I really work hard to make sure my children understand that all the members of the family unit are all equals. They are not children and we are not grownups. That's how I teach them. I want them to see mom and dad and their brother and sister. I want them to see everyone as equal, as a human being that have needs and preferences and desires, and we all have equal access to the things that we want and desire. So when my son wants the whole planet, the whole household to stop so they can watch a movie at 10 o'clock in the morning, I want to make sure he understands, well, you know, mommy's also got things to do and daddy's got things to do and your sister's in the middle of coloring her favorite art book. Like maybe you're not the most important person right now, but how can we value everyone so that, you know, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody's excited to sit down and watch a movie together.
That's a huge lesson.
Yeah. So it's not an easy one either.
No, no.
And with 5 years of difference between the two kids, they learn at different speeds. But for anybody who has two kids, and what you're going to find very soon, Jason, is that the second one learns at like twice the speed of the first one.
Really?
Because they have a mentor in their older sibling.
Oh, wow. Right?
Your oldest only got to learn from you.
That's right.
They only got to learn from you whenever you were around.
That's right.
But your second one always has the older sibling around. So they constantly get to learn like more about playing, more about reading. For me, my second one learned how to climb faster than the first one, learned how to jump, run, trip, like get past pain, all these things faster because they had this older sibling they had to keep up with. We say, generally, you hear people say the second one has to keep up. What that really boils down to cognitively is that the second one has a built-in coach every day of their life for their entire childhood.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Now that you say that, Andrew, I'm thinking about it. That's definitely true. Our son is – one, he's a boy, so, and I think we're noticing that, but he's just less fearful. He's more like going after it. And because my daughter has a bunch of kids her age, he doesn't relate to himself as – it's like having a dog. Like he doesn't be like – they're six and I'm one. He's like, oh, I'm going to go do that same thing. So he's trying to the best of his ability. That's very exciting, actually. That's a really joyful thing to think about.
Oh, yeah. So then, I mean, and it's not just physical stuff. It's, you know, it's all the emotional maturity and mental maturity, too. So really, parents only need to invest in the first one heavily. If you invest in your first one heavily, then your second one and your third one, they all get the benefits of the secondary and tertiary investment in the first child.
Oh,
you, of course, have to be a parent to all of them.
Yes.
So, yeah, we tend to forget that we're already building a legacy. Your first child is part of your legacy.
Yeah.
They're the ones raising the other children.
That's a great, I'm not even going to call it a reframe. It's just a really cool philosophy, perspective. I don't even know what you would call it. That's awesome. So this, I think this is going to lead us right into the next question. I have a feeling because I have a lot of data points on this. So Andrew, what's the thing that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I'm for sure. I'm most proud of my family, man. My family is something. My wife was my mother was my hero growing up. I lost my father when I was very, very young, too young to even remember my father. Mm. So I'm Latino. I was raised by my mother and her mother, and I've got all these strong women in my family. So for a long time, even at my CIA interview, they asked me who's my hero, and I was like, oh, easy, it's my mom. My mom went to bat for me. My mom went to fights for me. My mom scrapped with like guidance counselors in high school for me. It was all great. And then when I met my wife and my wife had my first child and went through all of that stuff that women go through to have a child.
Yeah.
I was like, holy cow, I think my hero just changed.
Wow.
And it's never changed. And what's really interesting is after motherhood turned, like, it was like a spotlight for me. Motherhood spotlighted how awesome my wife was.
Yeah.
And then in the spotlight, that was when all of a sudden I started remembering all these awesome things that we had done together. Like, wow, my wife like traveled the world with me and we did operations together. We went on dangerous missions together and she went on dangerous missions alone. Like just this whole history of stuff. And I was like, holy cow, she's a badass. And I am super proud of her. And then you have the idea of like, wow, and now I have these babies and a badass just bore my babies.
Yeah.
How proud am I of everybody else? So yeah, I tell my kids that we're all equals, but I certainly go to sleep at night thinking like I'm the inferior one of our family of four.
Yeah. I can definitely identify with that as well. I actually had my wife, my wife was guest one of season three, which is the season three of this episode. This will air sometime and you'll be like episode 20 or so. My wife was the first episode of this season. And I can tell you that based on the audience feedback that perhaps I should have her host the show because one, the downloads and subscriptions were incredible. And two, the amount of feedback I got on that and how my wife is awesome. I'm like, where were you all 99 episodes before? Because I've been here for a long time.
That's how it works, man.
That's how it works.
That's just confirmation about that's how just, cool she is.
Yeah. Like it was confirmation bias. I love it. But that was one of that was a fun episode, but yeah, it's interesting. It's like the greatest journey I think anybody ever takes is actually being a parent. And it's funny as I think of somebody like, I look at my life, I'm like, yeah, corporate career, did my own business. I'm like, you're somebody and your wife is somebody who's been, like you said, you've pulled up the checkpoints and you could have easily been killed. And I never would have known about it. Like I would have never known about the adventures you've likely had. I know you have the adventures you still have. But the thing that you're most proud of is always going to be your family is because it's so interesting. And I'm sure you would understand this as we're talking about human psychology. For every guest I have on the show, when I ask them that question, I ask everybody that question. If they're a parent, it's always their kids. If they're not a parent, it's a multitude of things. Mm-hmm. And that is over here as a parent, I'm always like, yeah, that's cool. But your answer is going to change because they're like, I don't know if I should have kids. I'm like, most parents you talk to will be like, it's the thing you're most proud of no matter what. I've talked to some people who've done some extraordinary things, including yourself, and it's always the kids because that's the thing that leaves a legacy back to what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Andrew, what's something that you're afraid might be true about you?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that that I'm the most afraid of being true is a lot of times people meet me and they tell me I'm smart. And I've never felt very smart. Like, I'm the first one to tell you that my sisters are way smarter than me. And, you know, I meet people and they say, man, you're so smart. And people want to hang out with me and they compliment me all the time. Like, you're just so smart. You're so much fun to talk to. You're so intelligent. You see things differently. And I don't ever want that to be true because I feel like if I'm actually as smart as everybody tells me I am, it's going to be a lonely life because if everybody is hanging out with me because they think I'm smart, then essentially they think they're not as smart. So who the hell am I hanging out with that is as smart? Or who am I going to hang out with to learn more from? And I know I've got people in my life that I look up to, and I've got people that I look forward to talking to because I think they're smart. And I don't ever want to stop being able to hang out with them, but they don't have many friends of their own.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lonesomeness when you become really good at something, including if you're really good at being smart.
Yeah. Do you have any quantitative proof of your intelligence based on military, you take aptitude stuff, CIA, I'm sure you take also, and I'm not asking for like your IQ score or anything like that, but you have actually been calibrated against the general population, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. So yes, the Air Force tests your intelligence, the CIA tests your intelligence. They test your proficiency in learning new languages and your probabilities for success and reflexes and all sorts of other stuff. Right. So I know that there are quantitative measures that show that I'm, above average in certain places or, in the high performing areas of other places. But I also I've seen the quantitative results that show where I'm not very high.
Sure.
Right. Like I've seen my EQ, my emotional quotient, and I've seen how low that is. So it's one of those things where the numbers don't match up with the feelings. And I'm the first person to teach people about the problem with feelings. But the other thing that's hard is when I'm in the military, I'm surrounded by, high performing military people.
And then of course,
CIA, they only surround you with other people who passed all of their tests.
Right.
It's like a surreal thing to walk down the hallways of CIA surrounded by hundreds of other brilliant people. And I never felt like I was equal to them. I always felt like they were brilliant and I was just the HR mistake. So.
You're like, you must have mixed up my paperwork with somebody else. I don't, I just don't know how I'm here, but I'm here. So I'm going to do it.
It's a great ride, dude. Right.
That's awesome.
Gets bumped up to business class every now and then, even though they didn't pay for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So Andrew, we're going to start to wrap up here. I got a couple more questions for you. The first question, and boy, this is a perfect question to ask somebody who focuses on spycraft and has spent all the time training on this stuff. How do you see the world?
I see the world as a very predictable place.
Yeah,
and I don't see it as scary, and I don't see it as I see it as curious and exciting, but I absolutely see it as predictable. And it's because the world is full of people, and people are just a higher version of animals. And just like you can predict, like when a dog is baring its teeth, that's not the time to mess with the dog.
Yeah.
And you can see that people are the same way. So I love the fact that no matter what country I travel to for work or for pleasure, it's full of people. And I know how to deal with people and I'm comfortable with people and I love being around people.
Yeah.
That's how I see the world.
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. Does anything about the human race surprise you anymore?
Yeah, there's always things about the human race that surprise me. One of the things that surprises me that I'm embarrassed to admit, one of the things that surprises me that makes me pretty sure I'm not as smart as people think I am, is I always expect that people are going to learn. Like I always expect that people are going to get better or improve, and then they don't.
Yeah.
Right? Like the same tactic or the same trick, whether it's marketing or advertising or whatever else, it still works. And I sit there and I'm like, how many times do you have to be fooled before you learn? And I'm constantly surprised by that. I'm constantly surprised, like what's happening in Ukraine right now. Surprised so many people, even though there's no surprise there, right?
No.
Like, and the what the future holds for Taiwan shouldn't come as a surprise, but it will.
Yeah.
And it's those things. It's hard for me. The midterm elections happen this year. A new president happens next year. We already know what to expect to see. Yeah, whenever we watch like the headlines, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about the slap heard around the world with Will Smith and Chris Rock. Why are we surprised?
No surprise.
It's an egotistical Arthur, an egotistical actor slaps a crude comedian.
Right.
Why are we surprised?
With a history with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's surprised. But I understand that, people like to be surprised. So maybe I know that they put up a barrier that prevents them from learning to maximize each new surprise.
Oh yeah.
I just need to stop being surprised by that myself.
Yeah. All right, Andrew. Well, thank you so much for being on. We're gonna wrap it up here. Everything you're about to give us is going to be in the show notes. So where can people connect with you now that you are a private citizen? Where can people connect with you? What can they find out about you? I think this is your real name. I'm going to assume it's your real name. I know you have a business. How can people connect with you overall?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me. The fastest way to find me is at my website at everydayspy.com. Just go to everydayspy.com, and you'll find my face. You'll find all my contact details. You'll find all of, like, I'm teaching people something new every day. Just go to everydayspy.com. If you're a podcast person, I have a iTunes top 100 podcast called The Everyday Espionage Podcast. It's one of those experiments that just went right, even though I didn't know what I was doing, Jason. I'm sure you know how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look up The Everyday Espionage Podcast on any platform and you'll find your way there. And then if you're a social media person, at Everyday Spy on any platform and you'll find me. I'm not active on all of them, but you'll find me for sure.
Awesome, Andrew. Thank you so much. All right. Last thing, my friend. I'm going to call you a friend after 55 minutes. Words of wisdom. What do you got for us? Short and sweet.
Yeah. This one is one that I always struggle with because it's hard to are you trying to be witty? Are you trying to be funny? Are you trying to be whatever? So my words of wisdom are that you are not the center of everyone else's universe. You're only the center of your universe. And when you step out of that and you start helping other people win in their own lives, then that's going to be how you win in your own life.
Awesome, Andrew. You could also have said live long and prosper as well.
It's somebody else's.
I know. I'm trying to think if I've ever, I have had a couple guests quote Star Trek as their, I'm trying to think if it was that or something else, but I want to wish you.
I also always like Make It So number two.
Make It So number two.
I guess it was Make It So number one, wasn't it? That was what Picard said.
Yeah, that's right. With the point, Make It So. With the best, with the best voice. Patrick Stewart is an amazing guy. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for being on. Very best of luck to you, to the family. Keep doing what you're doing for us out there. I really want to take your 2-day course, the actual live course. Growing up, I was a big fan of this stuff. Like I was one, I had like little spy books and stuff. So I'm really interested in how I can get there and start doing some of your stuff at some point in the near future. I'm on the East Coast. You're on the East Coast. Not a long flight with COVID lifting up. I think we can make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And right. if you want someone to host you for lunch when you come through Jacksonville, because you're probably going to pass through here on your way to Orlando.
We might. Let me know, Jason. Yeah, that sounds good, Andrew. All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
See you, man.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and give us a shout out or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.